It's that good H2O, dog.
Drink water, go faster.
Yeah. Oh, man, what a great way to start. And on that note, welcome back to JK Moto Podcast, a motorcycle podcast for the everyday rider, covering current bike and racing news, specializing in track days, club racing, and great
entertainment.
You got it this time. That's what's up. And this episode is brought to you this week and just about every week by JK Moto Entertainment, your one-stop shop for all your motorcycle track day, club racing questions and answers. Subscribe on YouTube, which is where we're at right now. Maybe, maybe not. If you're not, head over to the YouTube channel. Also follow us on Instagram and Facebook. And that's it. That's what I got. But anyway, if you're looking to check out the podcast somewhere other than YouTube, I got to give a quick little like spiel. This might be long. I don't want to sit in front of a screen as much as you don't want to sit in front of a screen. So go click the link down below to our RSS feed, where you can find links to every podcast platform in the world. At least the ones that we're on, which are the only ones that are important if you're here with us. Anyway, today's episode number 103.
Oh, we've been doing this for a while now, looks like.
Yeah, it's been a minute. Quick introductions. I'm Easton, in case you didn't know. This is
Kelly.
And we are your hosts for the day, and we will be talking about nothing at all.
No MotoGP weekend, no fantasy, none of that.
No, we're actually just here to completely. I was just going to like sit here and stare at you and say a lot.
Look into my eyes?
Yeah. We're just going to, for like hours, just keep the audience engaged, waiting on their feet, if you will. Now, anyway, we're going to talk about some MotoGP. They were over in Spain. I want to say Jerez.
Yeah, the Jerez track, yeah.
As opposed to Jerez. I'm just kidding. That was a bad joke. I'm sorry.
One of the Spanish tracks.
Yes, one of. There are a couple. And there are a lot of riders on the grid that are from Spain. So it's always kind of interesting to see when that comes to play. You know, in Italy, all the Italian riders come out.
Mm-hmm.
In Spain, all the Spanish riders come out. It gets a little awkward when they're talking about, you know, whose actual home track it is. But anyway, we'll get into all that. Stick around for the episode. We're going to roll an intro. And before we do, we got to crack open our non-sponsor for the night. If you're from America, you know. If you're from Europe, the European mind is ignorant and blind. And I won't finish the rest of that because it's probably got some copyright on it. So anyway, on that note, intro.
My first track day, I got the pictures back and I was like, I'm never doing that again. On the ground at 100 miles an hour.
I love the sounds that bike makes, man.
Yeah.
2 miles an hour.
Man, we're back. After that, sweet. That's what we should do. We should just run a podcast where we literally... Did I say this last week? Literally just make motorcycle noises.
If you could get us like a bunch of B-roll, just that.
Yeah, just motorcycle noises, period. You know when we're like... Here, if you guys aren't doing this, a pro tip, by the way. If you want to get faster on the racetrack, here's your pro tip of the week. When you're at work going around a corner, imagine you're on a motorcycle. So practice... And then downshift coming into it. And then drag your knee on the ground at work. Every time you come around.
Could you imagine just getting out of your knee, putting your knee on the ground? Like, what is he doing? I look at them, like,
oh, man. All right, before I forget, we do need to announce our weekly fantasy winner. Any guesses on who it is?
Shifty?
Ooh, nope.
Camhead? I'm literally guessing. Nope. I'm guessing. Nope. Is this for the week or is the current leader? We talking
for the week. The weekly point for the week? Winner.
I'll pull it up. I'm done guessing.
He's done guessing already. Anyway, if you're not following,
I'm gonna cheat.
We do have JK Moto. I think it's under entertainment. Yeah, JK Moto Entertainment League on the MotoGP Fantasy. If you're not in our league, please click the other link down below and join our league. Play along with us. We do give out prizes for the winner, literally. Every week, at least every week that there is MotoGP. So top point scorer of the week gets a prize, then we'll have a big prize at the end of the year for the overall winner, which as of right now is being held down by Cam Head, who is only actually 1 point ahead of Shifty. So shout out to Cam Head and Shifty. You guys are still holding down first and second. Shaky Meadows down in third at 834.5. But the winner for this week's...
For this week?
This week's weekly point winner is none other than yours truly, me. This guy, right here. I finally won for a week, which is real surprising because my lineup didn't do the best. But one of the guys on there did do pretty good. And
I'm starting to think this championship, low-key, might be just about consistency.
Possibly.
Because still early, but
yeah,
there's been a rider who's been showing up, putting on solid P2 performances.
Oh, there it is. Mr. P2 called him out.
Yeah, and you know what? Hasn't crashed out. Just been solid performances, and the right way to go with that just might be all you need.
Possibly. It's definitely possible. And, you know, that's something that this podcast used to give Juan Mir. We'll go ahead and cover Juan Mir real quick for the weekend. Also, he crashed out. What do you know? Crazy.
That's sad. I don't want to say I'm looking forward to it. It's just that whenever he crashes out, I go, like, he did the thing.
That's me. I mean, wait. It's Juan. Hey, there he is again. Yeah. It is sad. The caveat. So I guess I'll start there. Spain. Jerez. Circuit de Jerez. The Circuit of Jerez. That is
how that works, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Duolingo over there. It's a crazy track. That track is small. It's tight. I don't want to say the words treacherous because I wouldn't like label it as treacherous, but if you have watched MotoGP there over the years, every year that I've watched it, and correct me if I'm wrong, audience, please let me know, but every year that I've watched it, I have seen consistently like more wrecks at that track. It seems like almost every lap, another guy's going down.
Some of those, so from my limited viewing of like getting MotoGP relatively recently, from watching it this year at least, while they were Jerez, you'd see them coming in hot, trying to outbreak each other. And sometimes they'd go a little wide and it'd be like a nice little save. And then sometimes it'd be like, ooh.
Yeah.
Because they'd still try to break hard. They realize they're going wide. They'd try to like, you know, flip it over, try to come in tight. And it's like.
Yeah.
From the area views, it just laid over. It's like a little bit more than normal. Like, ooh.
Yeah. I mean, that thing's tight. It's nuts. It's technical. It's got a ton of turns in it. There's not like huge straights. There's still a plenty decent sized straight. It's not a tiny, tiny track. But I mean, they're running, what, 130? Fives, I think, out there during the race, 136s.
I think they were closer to 136, 137s. Because okay. I know, spoiler alert, toward the end, certain people were still dropping heaters consistently despite damaged machinery.
Other things. We got to talk about that too. We'll get into the aero in a little bit. But anyway, down in Jerez, it's a crazy track. And when you're watching a race, it just kind of feels like that sometimes, but it literally feels like every lap there's a new person that's gone down, and sometimes it's a really qualified rider, sometimes it's not. It's just a track that, like, when it bites hard, and it bites out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And so I feel like all the turns there have a very specific way where you can be real fast. They have a couple ways where you can, like, do good, and they also have a few solid ways where you can get eaten up.
Yeah, speaking of that bite, we saw that up and down the skill grid. Like, we saw people who were really good, people who are relatively new. We saw it happen all over the place.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's everyone. So, in Jerez, it's Spain. So, you got Maverick Vinales, you got the Marquez brothers, you've got Jorge Martin, who wasn't racing this weekend.
The new kid, Aldeguer.
Yep. Aldeguer is from there.
Scroll on the list.
There's a couple more.
Juan Mir, Costa.
Pedro Costa.
Rins.
Yep. Mir, Rins.
Both Fernandezes.
There you go. Those are the other two I was thinking about. The Fernandezes. And Aleix was riding there this weekend for Honda.
The guest feature.
So, like, Spain, I would say Spain right next to Italy is the top contender for MotoGP riders in the world, right? Out of all the countries. You got the rando South African Brad Binder, Australia.
Shoutouts.
No Americans yet.
Yet.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see who's headed up there. It's kind of how it is. So it's a big track. Everyone's trying to put on a show. I mean, Maverick Vinales did pretty good again this weekend. He had a pretty solid performance.
I think he's getting the hang of that KTM.
Yeah, possibly. I'm not convinced yet.
No, just got to believe.
Sure.
I just want to see KTMs up on the grid.
I do want to see him up there. I don't disagree with you. I would love to see him up there, but I'm not convinced yet. But let me go ahead and pull up the results so I don't start quoting stupid stuff.
You going to start with the sprint first?
Yeah, sure. We can start with the sprint. There we go. Man, there's so many Spanish people. Anyway, sorry, I'm getting distracted by Spanish flags. But where was I going with all that? Anyway, Jerez, once again, gave us a show. A showdown, a show. The opening lap of the race was impeccable, mostly peckable, like peco-able, if you will. Bad joke, sorry.
He's fine for his life.
Yeah. But it, I mean, it's just, it's awesome to see everyone actually come out. It's awesome to like, oh, that was what else I wanted to say was with it being a smaller, tighter track. I mean, you're well under 2 minute lap times down around that 1:30 mark. It kind of keeps everyone a lot tighter. So there's also not that many straights to like open up. So it kind of keeps the Ducatis in check. I feel like allows everyone else a good chance to stay in there. I mean, even Luca Marini was doing okay during the race. That's what I was going to say earlier about Juan Mir is it's a little sad that he's still wrecking out and Luca is not. Yeah, Luca finished right inside the top 10 in 10th during the race and just outside in 13th during the sprint. So, you know, even some of our quote-unquote not-so-good riders aren't doing too bad, and there's a lot of action going on. I love Jerez. It's a great track. But getting into the riders, I think the biggest surprise for me until I thought about it this weekend was Fabio. And I know you're a Fabio fan, so we'll tread lightly here. But I, much like you, I wasn't able to watch qualifying, so I came in, I turned the sprint on, and there's Fabio Quartararo sitting in first, and I was like, whoa, hold up. The front row looked a little weird. It was blue and then a couple reds, and I was like, okay, the reds, like, yeah, 100%, I see the reds. Who's the blue? And it was
I was Fabio. Genuinely surprised to see a Yamaha that far up and see if it was going to be a Yamaha, it was going to be Quartararo, but to see them up there with Quartararo pole qualifying, it's like a welcome surprise.
Yeah, it was
surprise,
nice
to be sure, but a welcome one.
It was nice. The sprint was a little
That was my excitement during the sprint.
See, you and I had interesting weekends,
and then it just kind of tapered off, you know.
Yeah,
when I saw him battling with Marquez, I was like, I'm like, please, please. I saw him in flashbacks, so like every time like Marquez and Bagnaia would battle last year, and it was like, it's like 50-50 shot, one of them wrecks out or both of them wreck out, and I was like, please, not like this, not like this.
Yeah, it was tough. One, I would like to caveat and say that the move Marquez made was completely clean.
Oh, yeah.
Fabio was just a little hot on the brakes.
Have you like looked at the replay of it, like when they showed the replay?
Yeah.
You just watched that back end get light, start getting squirrely.
It was like, more than light. It was 4 inches off the ground. He was not.
Yeah.
And
he still laid it over, and I'm like, this does not look good.
No, yeah, it was not promising. Like, in the moment, you're like, oh, man, did Marquez force him out? And, like, kind of. But when you're out braking and taking the inside line, like, once you have the inside line and you hold your braking longer, it's your line, right? And that's how racing is. And it happens. Wrecks happen. I don't think Fabio was mad at Marquez at all for that.
It broke my heart, though, so early in the sprint. I was like, oh.
It was sad.
Geez.
It was sad because, like, all the work he put in for qualifying and then to just lose it in the sprint. The race, however, I would say, came back nice and strong, held a good race, didn't quite finish first, but was able to hold off, you know, the ex-world champion multiple times. So, great job to him there. My only caveat to his performance, and the reason that I was less surprised later on, is pretty sure Yamaha specifically has done a lot of testing at that track.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, in the audience, you can back me up, or you can back me up if they haven't, but I just kind of started realizing, like, well, hang on. And not to take credit away from Fabio, because once again, the other Yamahas are not there, but they've got a lot of testing done at that track. So
my question is, are you saying that Yamaha specifically did a lot of testing at that track, or MotoGP does a lot of testing at that track?
MotoGP in general, but Yamaha specifically, because they've got the concessions, they've got extra testing sessions, because they weren't doing well in years past. I think they specifically have a couple extra testing sessions at Jerez.
Fair enough.
So it is. It's a great place to test a bike, I think, because all that technical whatnot, and your bike has to be very well set up to be able to, you know, it's one thing to be able to power down a straight. It's another thing to be able to have a bike that can do all of it. That's something that Ducati used to struggle with in the past. They would be able to power down every straight, but when it came to the corners and holding corner speed and whatnot, they just didn't have it. So they had some very high caliber riders, but unless it was a big straight track, they weren't necessarily
their strengths didn't really lend to other things other than that.
Yeah, and you know, over the years they've gotten a lot better at that, and some of the other bikes have fallen off on the big power, and so now, you know, obviously Ducati's come up and kind of taken the gambit, and they've got the best all-around bike, which is why they're doing so amazing, blah, blah, blah. But not trying to, once again, not trying to take anything away from Quartararo. Great rider, super talented. It was awesome to see him up there putting the work for the qualifying. Crashed out in the sprint, doing some pretty crazy stuff. Like, I mean, like you were saying, his back tire, I watched that. It came off, it went back down, it came off again, went back down. It was squirrely all over. Like, props to him for trying to outbrake Marquez.
I know how competitive races are, and I know that they always want to, you know, beat the other guy. Mm-hmm. But in my head, I'm like, bro, just please don't crash out. Just take P2. Just take it. Take P2. Unfortunately, that's not what happened in the sprint. So I was like, take P2, get some points.
So at the same time, though, you got to look at it from Quartararo's point of view. What's better, a P2 for some championship points or getting a win this season?
That's true. Getting a win.
First time qualifying in the front row. First time qualifying in first place since, I think they said, what, 2022 in Germany? Yeah. Or that was his last race win, was Germany 2022. But, like, first time being in first on pole for qualifying in a long time and at a track where the Yamaha can kind of succeed. Maybe not prevail and do amazing, but can succeed. So,
and when they were battling, it just looked like Marquez was just cruising, and it looked like Fabio was really pushing. And that's what you do, right? That's what Yamaha's paying him all the big bucks for. That's what they paid him for that multi-year contract.
Yeah,
that's his whole job, is to, like, you know, push and win. But I'm like, I was like so scared of him crashing out, and I was like, I would rather just him end on podium than crash out. And then when he crashed out, I just cried. Oh, man, I almost cried.
Turn the race off.
Almost,
it's over. Yeah, no, I agree. It's. Anyway, that's the story of Fabio. So, Fabio had a pretty good weekend. A little bit of crash in the sprint. To be honest, no offense, he ain't winning no championship this year anyway. So, it was kind of nice to see him out there pushing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with settle for the P2 to some degree, but I also agree with push it. See if you can. If nothing else, he learned something, right? You know, at that level, he learned, like, okay, I can't quite break that hard, which in the race, obviously never wrecked out, and like I said, was still holding off some pretty high-caliber riders behind him. So, clearly, it was good for him, and that was the story of Quartararo. Next up, I would say, move right to it, second place on the grid for qualifying, my boy, old Marky Mark, the 93.
He's good for it.
We should just quit the podcast. I'm over. It's over. It's done.
Every weekend is like, Marquez did good. See you next weekend.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Anyway, came out, qualified second. Fabio put down a heater, whatever, cool. Comes out into the sprint. He means business. Takes off, gets a pretty good start. Chasing Quartararo around. Comes into the second lap and doesn't take him out, but effectively takes him out. Quartararo takes himself out of the race in that move. We'll put it that way. And then Marquez goes on to honestly just clear a big old gap, a big enough gap that at the end he turned to look and see how far behind him his brother was and, like, lost a second doing that and still came across the finish with a second and a half in the lead. So pretty big gap there, especially for a sprint and for that small track. Where
he's such a dominant rider. I love it.
Yeah, he is good. Flash forward, though. Huh?
After all this time, such a dominant rider. He hasn't lost a beat.
No. No, some people even say he's actually way better because of his maturity and everything else, and then he wrecks on Sundays, and people start to maybe question that a little bit.
You can question all you want. Oh, my goodness, I've wrecked out of two races. Spoken the only races I haven't won first place in. Ooh.
Yeah.
He's suffering from success, all right?
They did say, everyone keeps saying that. I'll steal a commentator's line. The only one good enough to beat Mark Marquez this year is Mark Marquez. So, yeah. Which,
he is him. Like, he's the guy.
Yeah, 100%. And that's it'll be very interesting to see, because last year we had that back and forth between Jorge and Bagnaia, but they held down first and second so far so well. And so it really was just like a battle between them. And I feel like behind them, everyone was kind of up and down.
Yeah, fighting.
So it didn't matter as much. This year, you got Mark at the front just kind of dominating, besides his couple of wrecks. Alex, like you said, has been sitting there with the consistency. P2, 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 P3, P2, P2, P2. Just consistent. And that's how Joan Mir won that championship back in the day. Mm-hmm. Consistently top five. So 100%, if Alex Marquez can hold it in there, which he's on the GP24, doing very well, very comfortable with the bike, maybe he does. I don't know. But anyway, I never got the after mess. Usually I like listening to it the next week, to be honest with you, but I never quite got the, you know, what caused the wreck. Imagine it was just Marquez going a little bit too deep in that corner, a little bit too fast. It looked like he just kind of washed out the front. The crazy part is, and I will continue to say this, mostly because I'm a fan, but also because he's one of the few riders, he gets back on the bike, like picks the bike up, it's still running, gets back on it, and continues the ride.
Didn't he get back in the points too, like toward the back of the points?
If he had finished or not finished that race, he would have been 5 to 6 points behind Alex Marquez. He finished 1 point behind Alex Marquez in the championship because he came back in and got quite a ways up into the points. Yeah. And that almost takes me back
from like 22nd too. Like he got up into the back.
Yeah, no, he was like dead last. Got back up into the fight.
And like the wild thing is like you'd watch the replay or like just watch the race and you're like, oh, they're holding him up.
Yeah. Yeah.
The commentator's like, he would get this far up if he had clear air, but he's being held up by this rider. Then he passed him. He gets to the next one, be held up. Then he passed them. Then he puts him. It's like wild. It's like.
What's crazy is the first guy that he was behind, there was like a 9 second gap between him and last.
Not for long.
He ate 9 seconds and then just kept eating and eating and eating. And this is why I praise him so heavily for, I've talked about it before on here, so if I'm repeating, I apologize, but I praise him so heavily for getting back on the bike because of that reason right there. The man knows that even when he makes a mistake, he still has to fight like hell to get as far as he possibly can. And it's because of that exactly. He is now only 1 point down instead of five. Because 1 point down means that he'll be right back up next week. If it weren't like that, and he won next week, he would be tied. So this now puts him 4 points ahead, assuming it's a 1-2 Mark Alex, right? So
more in the vein of what we've had. That's right. How the points will trend out.
Exactly. So it's just insane to me that other riders will put a bike down and not get back on. They just walk away immediately. And this man is like anything he can do to get back on that bike and ride. I mean,
He quite literally is built different.
In Texas, he was riding without a foot pick.
So.
For multiple laps. It wasn't just like, let me ride this into the pits. No, he was out there fighting with people. Not well. He's out there
but
fighting.
But he was fighting.
He looked like he still had a foot pick. I couldn't remember if it was right or left. I feel like I was just looking at my bike and realized the chain's right there on the left side. Had to have been right. Anyway, no foot peg, still out there riding. This week, I wanted to get into the aero because if you looked at the side of his bike, there's not much bike left.
Yeah, that whole side pan, yeah.
Yeah, the wing was gone. All this stuff down here was shredded up. There's stuff literally like flapping off the
bike. Yeah,
the
gravel pit ate it all up. Mm-hmm. That plastic was flapping like, was it the fairings?
Yep, the fairings. And so there's all these air ducts that live down here, yeah. Side swoops and everything else. And it was just eaten up and flapping off the bike. And I'm pretty sure, I don't know if it'll show me on here. It won't. But I'm
looking for a picture of the side.
No, I was hoping to find his laps at the end and see if he did set the fastest lap of the race or not.
I don't think he set the fastest lap of the race.
I know he set multiple fastest laps of that lap, fastest man on circuit, multiple times. Like I'd say the last five laps, he was out there just cooking.
Oh, he was absolutely cooking. Yeah.
So it just goes to show, like, I mean, like you said, that he's the guy. Who can stop him? Himself. We'll see. The only thing I'll say is that I was really hoping this year he would not do that as much, and he would have that maturity. But at the end of the day, like, he's Mark, and he said before in interviews, he said that when he's in race mode, he doesn't think. It's all just fluid. He turns on, like, it flips a switch in his body, his mind, whatever. He goes into racer mode, and he can't stop himself from just pushing and pushing and pushing, which is probably why he's so good. However, also to his detriment. But it's two wrecks were. Fourth? Fifth round?
I think I'm going to start. No, sixth? No, fifth.
Fifth round?
Because last time was four.
Now I got to go back to the calendar, quoting stuff I can't quote. Finished. Two, three, four. Yeah, we were in Thailand. I forgot about that. Wait a second. That was all last year. No. What's going on here? Oh, it's going backwards. My bad. One, two, three, four. The opening was at four. So that was the fourth round. Okay, sorry for that. Fourth round. I thought it was the fourth. I kept saying fifth, though. Yeah. I don't know why that was.
Rather than that, other than Marquez, he had that other red Ducati right behind him. Well, not behind him, but behind Alex for the sprint.
For the sprint and behind Alex for the race. Qualified third, though. Pecco, standard fashion.
Solid result.
And he was actually kind of on his game all weekend. I was looking at the results. So like I said, I didn't watch the practices, but I think he finished top in practice in P1 or just P. Because they just call it practice now. PR, as they call it. No, in second behind Alex. FP1, he was down in seventh, which ain't too bad for Pecco. FP2, he was in fourth. And then in Q2, obviously qualified in third place. So, yeah, I mean, Pecco's kind of he should just call himself P3.
Mr. P3.
You know, that's what's funny about Alex, though, is like at least the man owns it. It's like, yeah, P2, cool.
I'll lay it.
Whatever, man, I'm down. Yeah, Pecco had a Pecco performance. For 2025, it's kind of just, it's what I'm coming to expect these days. Shows up, does pretty good.
Ends up on podium.
Ends up on the podium. Ends up behind the other two. And I think it was after the sprint, his interview kind of cracked me up. Because he started off with his like, yeah, you know, I'm so happy for the team. And or so glad that the team was able to do all this stuff. And we did really good. And happy for Alex and Mark. And they did really well. And he just like a little switch flipped. And he's like, but we have to do better. I can't keep up with these guys. And we have to change that. We have to fix something. We have to change something because I can't keep doing this. And then he just left. I was like, oh. Okay.
A little peek behind the curtain there.
Yeah. So.
I'm tired of coming in third, Grandpa. Well, that's too damn bad.
But yeah, I mean, standard Pecco and red performance. And that's what we saw. So KTMs. We'll get to Alex in a minute.
KTMs did show up, but like, you know, I think Maverick, like, was it Vinales came in, what, P7 for the sprint? Like, that was the highest one up there?
Yeah.
Behind the VR46s and the rookie Aldeguer for Grishini.
Yep.
Was that Alex's teammate? There we go, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep, seventh and then fourth. In the sprint, I will say he was the highest non-Ducati rider. It's because you had the two red, or the red, the blue, and then, wait a second. Yeah, because Quartararo wrecked out. In the sprint, because Quartararo wrecked out. So you had red, blue, red, yellow, blue, yellow.
I do love seeing the yellow. That highlighter yellow so far up in the grid compared to last year, it is nice seeing it up there.
They're doing good. I got Morbidelli on my fantasy team, so I can't talk smack anymore. What was he doing? Was it in the race that he wasn't doing so good?
I think it was in the race actually. He fell behind.
Yeah, he wrecked. That's what it was. He wrecked out of the race, yep. And I was like, ooh, come on, man. I need those points.
I need the points because you're not getting it from your manufacturer setup.
Yeah. No, I am. Just not from the team. Because I have Grissini as my team, which isn't bad. Alex is still pulling in. He's pulling in, but.
And then Acosta and Binder in 11th and 10th.
Yep. And then Bashnini. Poor Bashnini. Can't qualify. And the late race pace isn't really helping him on a non-Ducati. So, you know, Bastianini's a heck of a rider, but this is the first year we've seen him not on a Ducati in MotoGP. And the other KTM riders are not doing that great. However,
I am surprised of all the KTM riders, all four, the two factory and the two satellite, I'm surprised Brad Binder isn't doing the best on the KTM. I'm surprised that recently has been Maverick showing up. I don't know, maybe his setup for his riding style for that bike just found like the perfect setup for these last couple weekends, but Maverick's really been like showing up. And I would expect that to have been Brad Binder.
Or Pedro. I would throw that caveat there. I agree with
you. Just because Binder's been on the bike the longest.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Binder's been there the longest.
And he's had some standout performances. Well, I've seen some race every like in the past few years, his highlight reel, so big fan of him.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, like 2 years ago, he was kind of low-key in podium contention.
He's my fantasy. He was on my team last year, my fantasy team, before I knew what I was doing. I was like, I like him. I like this dude, like this dude. And, you know, Binder's on that list.
Yeah, I mean, he was in championship contention. Not like crazy, but he was kind of up there in the beginning of the year. I guess it might have been 3 years ago, because there was like Bezzecchi was up there. Brad Binder was up there. Like, there were a couple people that we were like, whoa, this isn't just a Pecco show. And Quartararo was still kind of contending for it. So, you know, there was a couple key years where Ducati was near the top, but you had some other people in there. You had some other
manufacturers
in there. Riders, I mean, you still had Jorge Martin still. Bastianini, no, because he was on the factory. That was the year he was out. It was the year before that he was doing okay, but...
Oh, yeah, was that back when Jack Miller was the other Ducati with Pedro? Not Pedro, Pecco.
Pecco, yep. Yeah, the good old 43 Australian flag also wrecked out of the race this weekend. Sad. But I just, I don't ever want to call a MotoGP rider not good or bad. But I really question when you go from a Ducati to another bike. Like, it is clear at this point. Everyone can understand, and everyone, we actually got a comment on a past podcast where someone was getting mad because it's all about what bike you have and not about your rider anymore.
To an extent, the Ducatis are the most dominant bike on the grid, so there is a aspect of rider skill that is not there when all the bikes are, like, spec bikes. Mm-hmm. Granted, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
It is. It is exacerbated when you, like, the top, you'll have a manufacturer, like, 6 to 8 bikes in the grid, and there's a couple weekends where, like, the top 6 to 8 bikes in the grid are that manufacturer. It does lend itself to be, like...
Well, that's kind of the hard part, and...
Like, the fact that Fabio Quartararo was so far up in the grid on a Yamaha, like, that was an anomaly. Like, no one saw that coming, just because we're so used to seeing a bunch of Ducatis, and then if a non-Ducati can crack the top 7 or 5, we're like...
Whoa! Crazy! Yeah.
So there is an aspect to, like, you know, it. There is an aspect of it being... bikes.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Even Marc Marquez, the great Marc Marquez on Honda, last couple of years on Honda.
Was not able to do well. The caveat I have there, though, is that, you know, the reason I can agree with someone getting upset about it being so Ducati dominant is, one, Ducati has 6 bikes on the grid compared to, and not just 6 bikes on the grid, but maybe they just have 6 great riders on those bikes. Maybe. I'm open for that. I don't think so. I think the GP24 is literally the king of all bikes we've ever seen. It might remain that way. It might not go away because we're going to come to completely new bikes in 2 years. And we might see the GP24 just finish out this era of MotoGP on the top, period. The issue that I have is back in the day, one could argue that it was the same way with Honda when Mark was on the Honda from, you know, 2013 to 2019. My argument there is that Mark was on the Honda by himself doing amazing. There were a couple other guys, you know, Danny Pedrosa in there for a little bit was also pretty good, but it wasn't 6 Hondas in the top. You know, their satellite team was not up there fighting with them. And in early 2000s, back before I really started watching, there might have been some different stories, and maybe we've seen stuff like this before, but Ducati got 8 bikes on the grid for several years, which, one...
A lot of testing, a lot of development, more bikes on the grid, more data compared to, like,
yeah,
a factory team and a satellite, if that. So is that 4 to 8, compared to 8? It's twice as much.
Yeah, so while it's just annoying to see that many Ducatis on the top, then also...
you're getting different riding styles, so you're getting different debt, yeah.
Ducati's getting a ton of testing and experience out there on their bikes, which might be why we got such a, like, ramp up of Ducatis at the end, is because they're like, hey, 8 bikes, we'll just keep buying teams, we'll pay for it, we want to win. And that gives them all that new data, all these different riders, much like you're saying. And they're able to use that. But the other thing, too, is then, like you mentioned, it's weird to have one manufacturer in the top 5 that's not a Ducati. That's a little different than your top guy is always a Honda, or your top guy is always a Yamaha, you know, whatever it might be. When back in Rossi's day, it was always a Yamaha, but it was always a Yamaha fighting with someone else. These past 3 years, it's been...
Ducati fighting amongst themselves.
Yeah, and that's it.
Pick your favorite flavor of Ducati.
Just kind of down there.
I think that's just, like, what you have when you have, like, a formula spec versus, like, a, what is it? Like, a spec bike versus, like, a formula spec, where it's, like, everybody make what you want to make versus everybody on the same piece of machinery. That's just, like, you know, the dominance will come in waves when you have that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, that's part of the sport. It's kind of fun. It sucks when you're not a Ducati fan. It also sucks a little bit when the bike is so good that you might have riders that are not as good, doing way better than riders that are.
The issue is, like, when you have, like, not that good bike, you have to take more risks to close the distance, and that is where you see some crashes, some other things happen. But hey, it's part of the sport.
Yeah, Quartararo.
You can always watch Moto2 if you want a spec series, right?
Zarco.
I was looking for him this weekend, but they give me a kind of skin on line. I'm like, ooh. These past few weekends, I've become such a Zarco fan.
Yeah. Zarco's good. I like Zarco. He's got a good attitude. He's a little old. Knows why he's there. Has fun. I don't really foresee him winning any races from here on out. But I think he'll probably keep his contract with LCR for a while.
Especially after these last few performances. Honda's like, hey, yo, this guy's pretty good.
Yeah. Yep, and he
he's
apparently
really showcasing what the frame can do.
Yeah,
what the chassis can do.
Well, and apparently he's great for testing. Like, he's one of the best riders for rider feedback on the bike, which we've heard about some other riders, but I think it's one of the reasons Honda picked him up. Like, when they offered him the contract, they gave it to him for a reason, because they wanted some good feedback, and he's able to kind of
provide that.
I guess able to interpret the bike very well and interpret that to the mechanics and the engineers.
So. That's like an underrated skill, a high valued skill. It's like, hey, I notice, because anybody can say, oh, the bike felt weird. But to be able to tell the engineers, hey, when I do this input, I get this output. I don't like that because of these reasons. And you're like, oh, I can adjust these parameters. They go back out. Hey, that thing I told you about, it did not do it as bad. It did this instead.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, okay, sweet, I can work with this. As opposed to, the bike felt weird, man. I don't like the way it's shaking on me. I don't like
it. Yeah, it kind of did the wah, 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 wah.
Yeah, then I do wing, ding, ding, wing, ding, ding.
Please translate.
Yes.
I don't know, man.
Yes, I shall address the preload. One of these days, I'll understand how suspension works. It just isn't today.
Preload, compression, and rebound.
Yeah.
You preload it to compress it, and then it rebounds.
I get a suspension.
I tried myself. Oh, man. It was, it was rough.
All
right. Trying to have someone explain suspension to me. I was like, what are all these things? And I got to give him a shout out, John Hutchinson.
I did watch that. Some of it went over my head. I watched that episode, but like, I was like, this guy knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, he started talking about valves. And
I wanted to, like, after that, I was like, I weigh 200 pounds. I want my suspension done.
There you go.
And I proceeded to never get my suspension done because I always have to like lose track time when there's a suspension guy on the track. I have to lose track time to get him to do my suspension. I'm like, I can just get more track time.
You should get your suspension done. You should 100% do that.
I got to fight a guy not at the track because I don't have the self-control to sit a session out after waiting.
The hard part
months.
With you is, like, with me, both times I've taken both bikes in, the guy's like, you're the one person that I'm actually not going to suggest new springs to. I was like, sweet, because it saves me money. Most people generally need a new spring, higher weight rating or whatever it is. I'm not a suspension expert. We're not going to dive into that today, but anyway, we were talking about...
We did the sprint. I think we're moving on to the race.
Well, I never finished up with Bastianini.
Oh, yeah.
My issue... I think he sucks.
I disagree.
Okay. I think he sucks.
I disagree.
Why?
Why do you think he sucks? Are you saying now that he's not... When he was on the Ducati last year, he was doing better, but that's not necessarily because of the Ducati. Also, Marc Marquez was on a Ducati, and so was Pecco. Mm-hmm. And so was Jorge Martin. Uh-huh. And then he late race pace, he was up there with them. Uh-huh. If it was just Ducati was good and he was bad, he'd be behind them with the other less up there Ducatis, like, what was it, Morbidelli and the other VR46s. He'd been back there with them.
The other VR46s weren't that bad. Morbidelli, not good.
I'm not saying they were that bad, but he wouldn't have been battling with the people he was battling with. He'd been battling with those guys instead or behind them.
So he might be better than them. I'll give you that. But I also think they're a little fluffed up.
You think they're also being inflated by the Ducati?
100%.
Okay. I thought you were just saying that Bastianini sucks, period.
No, like, not period.
Because this is his first year on that KTM.
Absolutely, but that's the issue.
Ducati signed him for a reason to be Pecco's partner when they first signed him. Mm-hmm. But before the crash, before that Bastianini lore that I wasn't there for.
Well, they signed him because he was Italian.
Yeah, before that Bastianini lore.
And maybe they just knew he wasn't as good as Pecco, so he'd be a great teammate because he's okay, but Pecco was the best.
There's so much like behind the scenes politics that some of these. I'm not saying that that's what they had, but like you realize that, like, hey, if you have a number one driver, you theoretically could just pick another driver who's also like a number one driver. But there's so many like behind the scenes politics that like if their friction's too high, they both don't do as good. Cole brought this up. That Senna documentary docuseries thing. Like, I don't know if you watched it, but I watched it after that recommendation, and it was a little bit of that with some of the other teams, and I was like, interesting. And you see that some other sports, and I'm like, oh, I'm trying to see the drama. not in the teams that I want to see, because I want to see my teams do good.
Right.
I want to see it in the teams that I don't like, so I can watch them fall apart, and my teams can do better.
Classic.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is the Ducati inflates a rider's performance.
I could see that. It's such a good bike.
Take Mark, for instance.
Yeah.
Huge gap this year. Behind him, all Ducatis. Arguably the best rider on the grid. And I'm a Mark fan, but I'm going to say it, best rider on the grid. Extra inflated because he's on a Ducati. Mm-hmm. Fermin Aldeguer. Ducati picked him up for a reason. He's a rookie sensation. He's doing great this year. Inflated because he's on a Ducati.
Are you saying if he's like on a pretty like a Gura, he might be further back there with them?
I think so.
Interesting.
And I think it's interesting that Bastianini, also a great rider, don't get me wrong, pretty good, has only ever ridden a Ducati up to this point, has been pretty good on the Ducati. As soon as you see that little inflation buffer go away, pair that with KTM's not doing that great this year. But we've seen Maverick come out. And now Maverick...
That's true. Maverick is also on that bike for the first year as well.
First year. Now Maverick's got a different type of talent because he's been all over. He's been Suzuki, Aprilia, Yamaha.
He's got his stat chart like more well-rounded.
Right? So he's obviously an adaptable rider.
His my rider
quickly,
stats are off the charts.
Quickly adaptable. Has to be for the career that he's had. But I think we're seeing a little bit of Ducati deflation, if you will, or non-Ducati deflation, and seeing the true Bastianini come out. Now, part of that could just be the KTM sucking and he's just not meshing with it well. Part of it could be he's just sad because he lost his contract. I don't know. But
well, if I lost my contract, I'd be extra hungry.
That's what I'm saying.
Because you have to be. Because if you have a sad year, if the team that has you doesn't want you, who's going to pick you if you had a bad performance that year?
Exactly.
Because every year could be your last year.
You're fighting for your future. You're fighting for your career in MotoGP. You get taken off the top spot on this inflated bike. You got to push.
Yeah, you got to get that. You got to get up. You got to get a spot back on one of those inflated bikes.
The only place that probably would still take him, and maybe because they just don't want anyone else, would be like Honda, because no one else wants Honda. Which, that's kind of the other caveat, is the grid does have bikes on it right now that riders don't necessarily want. But is Bastianini willing to fall for that? You know, he went to KTM because KTM was supposed to have a solid package. They did also go through their financial crisis this past year, so we are still possibly seeing that. I know we've mentioned that a couple times, but anyway, I said he sucks. I'll take that back. But I do think that his performance was inflated a little bit.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I hate to say the same, but I would almost say the same about Alex. I would almost say the same about Morbidelli, DG. Heck, maybe even Pecco. I don't know. I'll say it about Mark. His performance is 100% inflated. He is still the best rider on the grid. That's why we're seeing such a huge gap.
Yeah,
we're seeing this overperformance.
Get plus two stats and you get on that Ducati.
You think about it. Last year, Pecco wasn't pulling seconds on seconds against Jorge.
No.
So the Ducati inflation. That's what we're going to name,
is
name
real.
The episode.
Ducati inflation is real.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's about that time of the night. We're going to introduce a new thing. We're going to talk about our riders of the weekend. I got to hear yours first because I don't want to have the same rider.
If I had to hazard a guess, it was going to be Fabio Quartararo.
Is yours?
Yeah.
All right.
There's no way it wasn't going to be.
Okay. Easy day. I also kind of guessed that you would pick that person, and I wanted to also pick Fabio Quartararo for my rider of the weekend. However, my rider of the weekend is not Fabio at all, and it is the man who won his first ever MotoGP race, Alex Marquez.
Alex Marquez?
Himself.
He has been He's been consistent all day, every day. Mm-hmm. He's been showing up. He's been bringing home good points. Hasn't been crashing out. Got his first MotoGP win in the Premier Class MotoGP Actual in Spain. Every time that he would go past when he was in the lead, and you see like that Spanish crowd waving for him, I was like, "Oh, that's pretty cool."
It is
like
cool.
That's pretty cool.
And I'm pretty sure.
Even after he passed my man's in lap 11, whatever.
I'm pretty sure what I mentioned earlier, you know, they're like home track, since we have multiple in Spain. I'm pretty sure that Jerez is literally like the home track. It'd be like being from America vice being from Texas, right? Like they are from Jerez, I think, or close to. Anyway.
I got to do some more research for that.
As far as I can tell, I've never like actually looked. I did look into it once, but not long enough like to remember, to commit it to memory. But I say that because the one time they like go to a different spot in Spain and they'll talk about Elation and Maverick a lot more than Mark and Alex, because that's their home
like
track.
Their part, yeah.
So that would be like, I don't know, California or something. I don't know. American equivalent. Sorry, European mind can't comprehend. Anyway.
Yeah, but back to my guy. Watched him get on pole, start off, hold it down for such a long time. I did not think that he would keep it, to be honest. I want him to, though.
Pole position qualifying. Okay, yep. Got it. Stat one.
Yep.
Next.
Finish P2 in the race, the actual race.
Okay, what happened in the sprint?
He was in first place in the sprint until he wasn't.
he was in first place, and then...
Yeah. already talked about it, but after Mark took that inside line, he just couldn't get that bike to fully stop before he turned it in. He fixed it for the race, though.
So it's a hard argument, because Fabio had a stellar weekend. Killer. Came out, qualified hard.
He's not a victim of the Ducati inflation. That's all him.
Okay.
All right. You can't.
All right.
It's all him.
All right. You got me there. Oh. Dang. All right. That's a good point. All right. Let me back you up with some different stats, though.
Okay.
We come in, and I'm make sure I'm quoting this right. I'm pretty sure fourth for qualifying. Let's go here. Q2. Sure enough, down in fourth, we have a little A Marquez, number 73. Flash forward to the sprint. Mr. P2 comes to play. So, to get from fourth to second, how many people do you have to pass? Two. Who is one of those people?
Bagnaia.
Yeah, a two-time world champion on the same bike. Okay? And then, flash forward to the race. Where does he finish?
First place.
All right. Coming from fourth, how many people do you have to pass? Three. Call it two because Mark wrecked out.
Yeah, your boy crashed out.
But he had to pass Bagnaia and he passed Quartararo. Both ex-world champions. Quartararo on top of his game that weekend. Kept Bagnaia back after that. And that wasn't an easy pass. Yeah. But we watch Alex Marquez sit behind Quartararo for a while. We watch him calculate. We watch him ride well. We watch him ride pinpointed perfect, and we'll watch him make a pass and pull a gap. That is my reason why Alex Marquez is the rider of the weekend. He also brought home his first win ever, one of few wins for Gresini, because Gresini does not do that great generally. They're usually on the lower end of the Ducati satellite teams. This year, obviously, has been a little different with Alex up there, Mr. P2. But Mr. P2 can no longer wear the crown of Mr. P2. He's Mr. P2, sometimes one.
Sometimes one.
Yeah, hey, so
he's suffering from success.
There you go. So that's my reasoning for Alex taking the ride of the weekend. You're saying Quartararo. I can't. It's hard to argue some of your points, and there is the Ducati inflation.
I think I'm going to ride that for the rest of the season.
Anytime. I will appreciate Quartararo finished seventh, but if you take the Ducati inflation away, he's in third.
There'll be no Quartararo slander.
As well, we'll just put a deflation, like... filter. We'll just put an Instagram filter on it.
Yeah.
Ducati deflation filter, and it'll just kick out a few of the...
Yeah, it's like -2 positions.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh. It's like a tire penalty, but not as bad.
Anyway, that's the debate. We're throwing up Fabio versus Alex. We're going to keep this going throughout the rest of the season, so we're not going to call a winner on the show. We're just going to debate it, give you some facts, give you some reasons, compelling arguments, if you will, and I left Kelly a little underprepared for this week, so... Maybe next week or next race week, he'll have a better argument or debate.
I'm going with my heart, man.
All right. Heart only gets you so far.
You can use all your numbers Ducati and inflation. Facts.
Well, there you go. Anyway, let us know down in the comments who you side with, heart or facts, whichever one it might be. Real.
We can't all love riders on Ducatis.
That hurts. It actually hurts. I'm a head out. You can finish the show on your own. I'm out. Oh, man.
Hopefully my man comes back. My man Jorge comes back and gives him some competition up there on the grid.
We are keeping an eye on Jorge.
It just hurts because it's like, even when he comes back, he'll be so down on testing and seat time. And I don't think he's finished a weekend on that bike yet. Nope. But he'll take a chunk of the season when he comes back just to bring the bike home to get some data points for what he even likes on the setup of the bike. And that is such a humbling thing every weekend he doesn't compete.
So the thing with Jorge, he's got a two-year contract. He'll be with Aprilia next year. Next year's the last year of the big bikes. The hard part is Aprilia is not getting very much good testing in because they don't have the concessions. He's not there to give them the feedback that he wants.
Yeah.
And like you said, yeah, he hasn't gotten the testing. What is rough is
because they're only getting input right now from Bezzecchi and a test rider. And then I don't know if satellite teams feed data up to factory 100%. Or vice versa. I don't know if like factory gives it to satellite and satellite gives it to vice versa, what that flow of information looks like, if it's one way or modified. But
I can't speak facts on that. But I do believe when a factory says, yeah, hey, well, that's not true because the satellite teams buy the bikes from the factory.
That's what I'm saying. They're not loaners. Like, here's money. You give me your bike. Yeah. What I do with it is what I want to do with it because I paid you for it.
Generally, I think they work together. I would guess. And I have to put a guess on there. We're not going to spread misinformation on the show. We refuse to do that. But If I had to guess, I would say that the satellite team is going to want info from the factory team. And the factory team's not going to hand any out if the satellite team's not also feeding back info. And I've also seen satellite bikes used for, like, testing new parts a lot of times.
And then my question is this. Does that flow of information change throughout the season as one bike gets more competitive compared to the other bike, especially in a scenario where, like, the satellite team might be more competitive? An example would be, like, last year, Jorge Martin was on a satellite Ducati. What does that flow of information look like when Jorge is the title contender with factory Ducati? Like, what does that flow of information look like? Was that the same?
So, caveat to there, Jorge was on satellite team, factory spec bike.
Granted, he was on a factory spec bike, but the year before that as well, he was a factory spec bike a year older. Because 2 years ago, he had won a bike that was like a year older than Pecco's.
Prima Pramac has always been factory spec.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought it was just last year. Okay.
No, they were always on factory spec. Yeah. So that's the hard part with that one. But there was an article I read, and I don't have the source for you guys. So but that
was the anomaly, right? All the other factory bikes, satellite bikes team is a year older.
Sometimes. Yeah, I think KTM's rocking the same bike this year.
I got to do some more research on that.
Yeah, it's weird because it's not...
Because it's not, like, consistent.
Generally, they'll sell last year's bikes, and that's where the satellite team comes in and gets them. And generally what we see is that satellite team comes in and has the bike and they kind of do their own testing. And we usually see a satellite rider and bike mesh very well around 2/3 of the way through the season. So that's where, like, Bastianini, back when he was on the satellite Ducati, 2/3 of the way through the season was really kind of coming through, which is, yeah, because he was with Grassini and he was really coming, like, it was at the end of the season where we saw him, like, really take off. Or Bezzecchi, right? At the beginning of the season, that VR46 bike, he wasn't doing the greatest. Near the end of the season, he was doing really good. So that's where we kind of see that. I read that in an article after doing it and, like, thinking about it and looking at it. I have kind of noticed it a little bit. That's why some people thought Mark might actually come back and win the championship last year. Because they're like, he's already doing so good. Will he be able to mess with that bike more and hit that kind of, like, primo point? Whereas a factory team, you have all your data from last year, and you have all your testing on this bike, and you have all this, like, new testing from the factory done already. Like, I mean, Ducati takes their bikes through wind tunnels and all this different stuff, and they'll make mock riders and put them on the bikes and go put them in a wind tunnel to build the bike around the rider. Like, it's crazy. It's insane. So that's generally the kind of correlation between the factory and the satellite team, at least as far as I've seen and heard. Which is why we see those people going, the satellite teams.
I'd love to be an engineer in front of those companies, man. Like,
it would be cool. I would work for
even like a Toro, like one of those factories, and like go through their process.
Yeah, there's a book called Motorcycle Dynamics that talks about motorcycle dynamics.
Oh, yeah, I've seen you with that book. I opened it. It was above my eye. Yeah, it's above my pay.
Yeah, it
looked like a, when you opened it, it looked like a textbook.
It is like a textbook. When, like, I opened it, I was like, I'm going to read some cool stuff about motorcycles. And it was like, all right, yeah, so you take the cosine of the angle of the rake of the bike, and then you apply that to the tangent of this other angle of the swing arm.
It will let you go to a class, and they give you, all right, go read chapter 3 and 4, and then do homework problems, this and this. And you come back and be like, I couldn't do any of those.
So according to that book, in Italy, they have that. You roll into class, and there's a motorcycle sitting on a cart. And they're like, yeah, okay, today we're going to talk about the effects on the motorcycle's performance through a turn if we take the angle of the fork and move it 2 degrees further back. And that's it. And you just talk about that for 8 hours, maybe. I don't know how long. Probably only a couple hours.
Yeah, that's what we need to be on one of those teams.
We need a degree in motorcycle dynamics.
Yeah.
That's what I need. In the States. Maybe we'd have better, anyway.
An all-American team going?
Something like that. Anyway, that's going to close us out for the night. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. Once again, let us know down in the comments who won the Rider of the Week debate. We'll be keeping that up through MotoGP races to follow. And next week, we have some testing going. Actually, the testing's going on right now, I believe. Yeah, like it actually just got done. It happened today. Ooh, they have results. Boop. Mark Marquez on top. With a 136-184.
Yeah, Luca's behind him.
I missed it. Hang on. Yeah.
It's like Maverick. Followed by Fabio, Rins, Costa.
So you're looking at the second one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was looking at the first FP1. Yep. Yeah, Yamaha's up there. Rins is up there. It's wild. Yeah. It is also just testing.
No. You should base all your expectations for the season moving forward based off this testing.
Based off the testing. Well, let's look and see. Mark Marquez at 135.8. Let's compare that to the Spain Q2. Should have been the fastest laps. Mark Marquez at 135.6. So, yeah, he wasn't setting heaters. So, anyway, in 2 weeks' time, May 9th and 11th, we will be in France. France is special, because who's from France?
Fabio.
Fabio Quartararo and Zarco. Your other favorite, Juan Zarco. So, anyway, we'll meet you guys back in France. Got a couple of French riders out there on a Yamaha and a Honda instead of a Ducati.
I'm trying to see the Frenchmen on the Japanese bikes outdo not that on the Italian bikes.
There you have it. And that's where we'll meet you guys next week. We appreciate you guys watching. Once again, please subscribe to the channel down below, throw a like on the video, and please let us know about who won the debate of the week. And go join the fantasy if you haven't already. Unfortunately, I'm taking the prize this week, but next week, it's up for grabs again.
Make sure you hit yourself up on Instagram so you get that prize.
Yeah, I will hit myself up on Instagram, and I will send myself that prize. Anyway, appreciate you guys being here. We'll see you guys in the next episode.
On the ground at 100 miles an hour.